My name is Jackie Lamport. Today is Friday, December 10th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show,
it'll have a lot of eyes on it from people who maybe aren't as familiar with the Coast Salish people, and he hopes that it will like draw people in and have them asking questions and like finding out more about Coast Salish people.
A local Coast Salish artist has had his art selected to be used on the Salish Heron, a new Salish class ferry that will carry travelers between the Gulf Islands. So for Good News Friday, Good Newsletter editor Emily Fagan joins us to share her story. Today's Good News Podcast is brought to you by Doodlebug Pet Food. Ever heard of cricket protein? Try cricket-based dog treats made by Doodlebug, a local business. Doodlebugs are nutritious, sustainable, and hypoallergenic. They come in two delicious flavors, peanut butter banana and pumpkin apple. Order online at doodlebugpetfood.ca. Emily, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Again, another interesting story this week. Tell me about your subject, Maynard Johnny Jr.
Maynard is a local Indigenous artist. He's been doing Coast Salish art for 30 years now. So he is very much kind of in the middle of his career as an artist.
Yeah, and he's had a decently successful career already, too.
His work has been featured in the background of kind of a lot of like shows and movies, including Grey's Anatomy. He told me that his art has been bought by collectors across the world, including like Germany and Scotland. And one of his painted sculptures, actually, it was a fiberglass coho salmon. They asked him to donate it to Tower Zero in New York City. Wow. So while Tower Zero was being built, it was in an Indigenous history museum in New York City. And now it is somewhere inside Tower Zero, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And one of the things he also is really proud of is he designed his design was featured on the top of these like cedar chests. There were about 30 of them given to Canada's top musicians at the 2009 Juno Awards, and so, including some of his favorite musicians. So now in the homes of all these musicians is his work.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a wonderful career.
Mm-hmm.
And still so young. Incredible. The newest thing that's pretty big for his career is the BC Ferry situation. Can you explain that?
In 2015, BC Ferries decided that they wanted to do these Salish class ferries. So there's now four ferries that are set to go around. Three of them are already active, going around the Gulf Islands. So the first three Salish class ferries were kind of artists submitted their work in 2015, and now they're already at sea. And this was the fourth of them, the Salish Heron. So about 3 months ago or so, Maynard was shortlisted as an artist, given his career and his previous work, and so he submitted his design for the Salish Heron, and out of 36 other submissions he was selected as the person to be featured on this new ferry, which is pretty incredible. It's his mm-hmm. largest, like physically his largest work to date.
What made his work stand out? Why was he selected?
I spoke to Kathy Charles Weirley, and she was she's a special advisor to First Peoples Cultural Council, who worked together with BC Ferries on this project. And she said it was a really tough decision. There's so many great local Indigenous artists, and they had some really great designs. But what it really came down to is she really liked the dynamic and colorful style of his design. She felt he used the space really well. Like, you imagine a heron kind of upright, but the space is, it's kind of this rectangular, like horizontal box that they were given. They were given it very small as well compared to like how big it will be on the ship. And she just said he used the space really well, and it just was exactly what they were looking for.
That's awesome. Like you said, this is going to be the biggest piece of his career physically. How is he feeling about that?
He has yet to see it on the ship. The ship is actually making its way from Poland over the next couple of months and will be arriving in the Salish Sea, and then will be wrapped with his design. And in May, he and his family get to take the maiden voyage for free on his ship, which is pretty cool. He tried to get it written into his contract that he would get free BC ferries for life. Unfortunately, you know, wasn't able to get that in there, but it will be
one
free trip. Yeah, exactly. The amount of times you take BC ferries.
Now, he is an Indigenous artist, and there's a lot of meaning to this project for him and intention in what he's doing. Can you explain what he talked to you about?
So a lot of his work, he says, is inspired by, well, when he was first starting out as an artist, he would go to the Royal BC Museum. He didn't have a mentor or anything, but he studied the work of Indigenous artists from 7,000 years ago. These like spindle whorls and like all these artifacts that Indigenous people have access to in the archives of the museum. And while he has some complicated feelings about, like, you know, these things being kept in drawers, it allowed him to study them in a really up close way. And he also was able to study the work of other prominent Indigenous artists who are part of the Salish Renaissance, which is something that he considers himself part of, including Robert Davidson, Art Thompson, and some other folks. And so with this project, it's very much not the culmination of his career, but he feels like it's another step in his career, like having his work on this very big, very visible, iconic aspect of, you know, island life. Is it'll have a lot of eyes on it from people who maybe aren't as familiar with the Coast Salish people, and he hopes that it will like draw people in and have them asking questions and like finding out more about Coast Salish people. And he told me that he feels like it's a step towards truth and reconciliation, like you know, it's all part of steps, but he feels like this is, you know, something propelling forward.
Yeah, it was interesting reading your article. One of the things he had told you was how much he wants this kind of artwork to be in your face to, you know, Europeans and settlers, so that, you know, we can see the existence and see how beautiful it is and just be reminded of what was here and what is here today. And one of the things that he said was about hoping to perhaps have something in the Vatican.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he was chatting with me about that kind of at the end of our interview, we talked for an hour actually about all of this. And when I asked him where he wanted to go with his career, one of the things he brought up was he'd love to see, like, obviously some of the world's biggest art galleries are in England and France, which has a lot of complicated feelings for him, obviously, as those are two of the biggest colonizing countries in the world. But he'd really like to have his art kind of have like a slap in the face kind of, you know, presence for these countries, and in the Vatican particularly, as the Pope and the Catholic Church were such prominent figures in like colonization and everything in Canada. Even if he can't get his work into the Vatican, he hopes that, you know, being the first Indigenous artist in one of these big museums would be like, he doesn't place too much value in these museums, but he also at the same time like believes that he could be that first artist.
Yeah. Pause here for a quick word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Community Plus Care, providing compassionate personal home care and nursing services from 1 to 24 hours a day. Community Plus hires experienced caregivers and pays a living wage plus benefits to retain the best people to serve with empathy and integrity. Visit them at communitypluscare.ca, your local independent source for home healthcare options. He has a lot that he wants to do with his art, clearly, and that comes with who he is as a person and the challenges that he has faced as an Indigenous artist. What did he tell you about that?
He told me he faced a lot of systemic racism, especially like as a younger artist. People are constantly trying to negotiate like prices. Like if you tell them this painting is $1,000, they'd be like, well, actually, that's a $500 painting. And he said that even if you walked away from that with $700, you know, it's devaluing your work, and it's people, you know, not treating you like a partner, but treating you as an employee that's disposable, that can be kept down. And yeah, he expressed a lot about systemic racism in the art world, particularly with gallery owners. But he's spent a lot of his 30 years kind of working towards building up his own value and like being able to set limits and boundaries with these kinds of systems. So now he's in a place, luckily, where he doesn't have to work with folks who, for example, try to do 2-for-1 deals on his art just like treat him as if, like, no one would go into the grocery store and say, I actually want that apple for half price. So, you know, he's kind of at the point where he can say, no, get lost. Like, this is what I'm worth.
He has a lot of big ideas and big intentions. But perhaps one of the most interesting things was what he told you about what he wants for the future of his art and how he wants it to impact his family. What was that?
For a long time now, he's when he's made paintings, he's kept one or two prints and given them to his mother. And through kind of the hardest times of his career, he says he's very glad to have given these prints to his mom, because otherwise he might have sold them off. But he knows his mother like would never sell these paintings off. So now it's like accumulated all these paintings. And he hopes to, as he like goes on in his career, he hopes to keep giving her more of these paintings, because an artist, as a lot of people are aware, artists don't often see the full value of their work, like, paid to them during their career. A lot of artists, mm-hmm. their paintings are worth more after they die, or mm-hmm. even years and years later, like, people who resell them are the ones that profit the most. Like, it's seen as an investment. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he doesn't want this equity to be just someone else profiting off of him. He wants his family to be able to use that legacy to have equity in their own futures. So with this kind of stockade of paintings that he's now accumulated, he's hoping that by the time, you know, he retires or passes on, he will have so many that his grandchildren will be able to, you know, do what they want with those paintings, either sell them off or use them to kind of build up their own futures. And as part of that as well, his house is on a reserve. So he says it doesn't have as much equity as, you know, a house that wasn't built with the cheapest materials the BC government could use. So he's currently trying to, you know, he's like saving up to buy a house that his family can also live in.
Oh my gosh, that's like a whole other topic that would be really interesting to explore, is that all of these people who have owned their houses for, you know, 15, 20 years, 30 years, they have accumulated massive amounts of equity on their home. Whereas, yeah, and living on a reserve, he hasn't been able to see the same, I guess, benefits of the housing market, mm-hmm. Which is just, I mean, this is a creative solution to that, but it's also, it points to a larger issue, which will be very interesting to look into at some point. But I digress. Thank you so much for bringing this story to us. It's fantastic, and I look forward to perhaps seeing that artwork in the harbor.
Yeah, of course. I can't wait to ride that ferry personally, and I'm sure he told me he has other projects in the works, so I'm sure there'll be more to come to watch out for him.
A local treasure.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Thank you, Emily. To read the full story, you can check it out at capitaldaily.ca. And also, if you want stories like this in your inbox every single Friday, you can subscribe to Emily Fagan's newsletter, the Capital Daily Good Newsletter, which comes out every Friday. You can also do that at capitaldaily.ca. And if you want to help support Capital Daily's local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, you can email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating and a review, and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamport. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you Monday.